Welcome to the AP Podcast. This is your host, Mike Shea. Several times a week, I receive emails from new bands around the country asking how they can make it big in the music industry. Sometimes they just want me to check out their songs on MySpace and give them an honest opinion. Most times, though, they want to know the secrets of surviving in today's music industry. Now, what I realized was what these bands needed was some form of advice, not just from me, but from others within the music industry that are surviving in it now. So these podcasts are literally about that, the music business, how it functions or dysfunctions, and how it's adapting or not to today's ever-changing technology, as well as to music fans' desires and demands. This first podcast is with a musician whose band is the latest example of one that has struggled at the bottom, paying its credibility dues within the music underground, and then breaking big into pop-punk stardom. I'm talking about Chicago's Fall Out Boy, and our guest is the band's bassist and aspiring DIY businessman, Pete Wentz. Pete and the other three members of the band, singer Patrick Stump, guitarist Joe Troman, and drummer Andy Hurley, are now considered at one of the peaks in their career. They've gone from playing basement shows in suburban Illinois to playing sold-out concerts in mega arenas around the world. Yet the band is now struggling to maintain its credibility with its original fan base, while also handling the ever-growing demands from their mainstream success with crossover audiences. An ever-curious entrepreneur, 28-year-old Pete Wentz has started his own record company, Decadence Records, which he co-owns with Fueled by Ramen owner John Janik. The roster of artists Pete has signed to date are some of the hottest bands in music today, including Panic at the Disco, The Academy Is, Gym Class Heroes, Cobra Starship, classic punk band Lifetime, and a band whose fan base is growing by the hour, The Hush Sound. He has also started his own media company, Clandestine Industries. It includes a growing boutique clothing line, a book division, and a DVD line. And he recently started an independent film company called Bart Skull Films. In 2005, he released the DVD release The Bats, a mosh pit of Jackass-like pranks mixed in with backstage footage and outtakes that quickly became a hit with the band's underground fan base. It's with this DVD and Pete's overall objectives with his film company that we begin this interview and a look into the business that is Fall Out Boy. So your idea for your film division, your DVD division, is it kind of like to make things that are more or less like for a particular group of people, or is this something you're trying to kind of hope in the end, like you're going to start putting out things like a, you know, the like the Woodstock DVDs that come out and they're accessible to a majority of the people around the country?
See, I haven't put as much thought into that particular like division as I think I should. We've been talking about a Release the Bats 2 for the longest time
already.
Now. Yeah, and we have all the footage. We haven't edited it, and it's kind of moved away from some of the jackassy stuff to more. I mean, I think a more intimate, like behind the scenes, and then like also kind of like with these skits within it as well. And I mean, I would love to be able to do to appeal to a wider audience, but the problem is every time I'm ever told that we want to do that or whatever, we were told, you know, you need financial backing or you need whatever, and that, to be honest, because of where our band is and stuff, it's not really that hard to get that, but it's always this like, you know, $10 million snowboarder movie where it's a band and they like rob banks too or something, like I don't know, like, right. And that's like really one that we've been approached, that's like honestly one we've been approached with, you know, and like I know enough that anything that I put my name on or our brand on, it has to be something that I'm really into, and so if it's not, you know, and it's just to get your foot in the door, I think it's probably just like a poor idea. So it's something where I want to do it more, and one of the other things I want to do is I want to release for like our artists and for Fall Out Boy is release like video reels, because, you know, I don't know, like Morrissey used to do it and stuff, and I don't think bands really do it as much anymore. Sometimes labels do, but they'll just like slap it on kind of, you know, or whatever. Right. And it's like, I think that there's videos that we have out, you know, that people, a lot of people have probably just never seen before because they just don't get played anywhere at all. And I think it would be cool at some point to have like this one that's like career spanning.
Like an ultimate box set, visual
yeah.
box set.
Yeah, definitely.
So is it something like for the, you know, when you're starting the DVD side, is it something that you're just, you're purposely as a entrepreneur, is it something that you're sitting there going, I want to have my hand in as many things as possible that could utilize the talents of our band into,
Is that really the idea, or is it kind of like you're waking up one day going, you know what, maybe I just want to have a...
It's kind of like a mix of both, because sometimes it's like, I really want, like, and you get, like I said, like, we get approached with, like, the craziest stuff ever. Like, how about, you know, a Fall Out Boy sports drink? And you're like, let me think, you know? And it's always like, you know, you're always weighing, like, the you know, what makes sense versus what really just doesn't make sense at all, you know? And sure. What's forward moving versus what's not. And, I'm not stupid. I pay attention to, like, you know, DVDs are kind of an essential technology as far as that goes right now, I think, because, I mean, ripping them and downloading them is still a lot harder to do than music. And I've noticed a lot of shows and different things kind of have more cult followings than DVDs, and you're able to kind of do that, you know? I mean... A gold DVD, I think, is 50,000, you know, and I just think that it's kind of a different market, and it's interesting, and it's something interesting to do, but we're kind of just dipping our toe in it right now, and not trying to jump headfirst and put out, like, 1,000 DVDs or, like, you know, like, before we've really figured it out, because it's a completely, the interesting thing about all the facets is they're completely different. And if you approach them only the same way you approach your band, I don't know. I've particularly noticed, like, I feel like I've seen a lot of musicians kind of fail in other endeavors because I think they've approached them like they approach their band. It's like people are, you know, will ask me why I don't wear, like, Clandestine on stage every single night. And one of the reasons is because I've watched with, you know, whether it's rappers or musicians or whatever, and... sometimes their clothing line will have something cool in it or whatever, but at some point it became oversaturated, like they'd worn it too much, and essentially they have two of these things, like two of their band, you know, and it's like people who are not into your band might even think that the thing is cool, but they're not going to buy it because right. It essentially means that they like your band, you know?
Right.
And so, I don't know, it's a fine line to walk because at the same time, you want people to know about it and, you know... I don't go and slap it on other bands or anything like that. So it's kind of like, how do you do it? You know,
it's a exercise in marketing and subtlety.
Yes, definitely.
Or almost subconsciousness.
Definitely.
It's kind of interesting because we actually found that, you know, as much as, you know, people may want this thing in one format, but another format, it may not happen. Like with the Offspring, every time we put the Offspring on the cover, it never sold. I mean, you know, multi-million. You know, even at that peak when right. They were in there, was it 95, 96 or so like right. that? And sold crap.
Right.
And it was, so we just kind of got the feeling that Offspring fans just want to hear them.
Yeah,
they don't totally. Want to read about them. So, yeah. You know, it definitely does happen. But, you know, is this something where, you know, you went to university at DePaul.
Mm-hmm.
And now the question is, I had heard that you had majored in business, but I've also heard political science.
Political science.
Mm. So was this something that you were kind of, you know, at some point sitting back in college, you know, I remember when I was in college, I would start daydreaming at some point or another, especially with a bad prof. And, you know, and you start daydreaming like, you know, someday I'm going to do this, that, and this, and this, and this. And was a lot of these projects that you're doing now with the books and that, was that something that you would kind of... like, you know, thought about back then? Or is this something now we're just kind of kicked in with the opportunities because of the connections, the networking, the money, and the success, and the branding?
I think I always had daydreams. Like, I would have ideas, and I still have them all the time, where I'm like, man, I really want to get this patented. You know, I'll come up with, you know, random ideas. And,
sure.
And you know what I'm saying? And it's like, there's sometimes the stupidest things, but, I mean, you watch... these things that come out, and some of them are just like the stupidest kind of, you know, whatever ideas. And so I've always had that. And this is just kind of just a huge stepping stone to be able to kind of showcase some of the ideas. And, you know, some of them you have a huge passion for, but still aren't interesting to people. And it's like, how do you negotiate? Like, it's still something that you feel passionate about. So you're still going to put some of your effort into it, but mm-hmm. you know, so it's interesting.
Is there something where you I just have to get this out of my head because I do so much in politics on my side on my side time, but why the political science?
It's weird. Growing up in high school, I really liked writing and I really liked history, and I couldn't really care for any other subjects at all. And
same year.
So when I went into college, I just found myself I went in and I was like, you know, undeclared for a long time, and I kind of just found myself gravitating towards those courses, and particularly those professors. I really felt like, for the most part, they had similar ideologies to me, I felt like, at DePaul, and but similar in the way they were obviously older and far more well thought out, you know. And I just thought that was probably the direction that I would be heading in my life. And so I don't know, I was really interested in it, and I didn't want to have just like a cocktail party knowledge of it, kind of like I wanted to be able to really, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So.
Right. Get into the Habsburg Empire.
Yeah. 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 No, totally.
Exactly. Let's debate about it. For all the history geeks out there, what was your period? Every history geek's got a period that they were fascinated in, or a nation. You know, like you go to Barnes & Noble and you're always going to that one spot on that history section.
Right. I guess for me, it would be... sometimes, I mean, it depended. I guess it was either Industrial Revolution or I was definitely into... And this is probably just from reading a weird Tom Brokaw book, was all like the World War II kind of...
The best generation.
Yeah, whatever, the best generation, the parents of the baby boomers or whatever. Yeah. And I thought that was interesting, and like, you know, like the last war fought for the right reason. I don't know. I mean, I found it all interesting. I mean, think at the time, and a little bit of that's kind of... me kind of reviewing history probably in a different way, because I think at the time I was really into like the Zapatistas and I was really into, you know, kind of these ultimate like leftist like revolutionary groups.
America.
Yeah. And it's like when I was 18 or 19, that was what was really you know, like that right. was what felt right and felt exciting.
Hate
and
the CIA, hate
yeah, and I was really into like, you know, like the Huru Party and the Black Panther Party. And
did you have a Che Guevara shirt?
Yeah, of course. You know,
there
and
you go.
Before it was in Hot Topic, right. I think, you know. But I mean, it was that was what was really exciting about it to me. But as I was in political science, like you learn about everything that leads up to that and how that's existed in various different countries through various periods in time and in various different structures, kind of.
You know, this may be a stretch of a question. I'm just curious about it, but is there anything you've kind of you can take from history, from what you can what you've learned, you read, and you've experienced, and you're studied and stuff like that, and been able to apply it to your career so far with the band, and kind of keep you guys from making mistakes or steering yourself, or maybe kind of working through some bull crap that you guys have had to go through?
Well, definitely when you read anything about the founders or the guys like right before they left, I mean, I think a lot of it's applicable. And obviously, like Jay-Z and everyone else, I've read, I think, what is it, the 48 Laws?
Yeah. The 48 Laws of Power.
Yeah.
And then there's another one that came out, like the 48 Laws of... it's like not influence, but like influence. So how to like win somebody over?
Yeah, and it's interesting because a lot of them are obvious, and if you're a certain type of personality, you do them anyway. And then a lot of them, when you read them, you're like, it makes me feel like a really bad person,
right?
You know,
exactly.
Or whatever. And you're like, do I do that? You know, or whatever.
Right.
And it's like, I mean, it's very Machiavellian.
Yeah,
and,
I was just gonna say.
You know, but. That's definitely applicable. And I think that, I mean, even down to the point of like looking at like, you know, like the Black Panther Party and their points and kind of when you try to do something, I mean, because essentially what it's always kind of been to me is, it's gone to this Rage Against the Machine lyric, which is the weirdest thing that, and it's never ever been said in interviews. I've said it a couple times, but nobody's ever said it, is that, like whenever I think about it, I think about, you know, fuck the G-Ride, I want the machines that are making them, you know. And it's like when you're in a band this level or whatever you're doing at this level, like there's always going to be corporations that are, you know, looking to back you or looking to be involved with you or whatever it is. And it's like why couldn't you be that corporation, you know? And then you would always, at least you would always be going to sleep with whatever your ideals are.
Right.
Like, you would know what they are.
Well,
like,
it's the ultimate DIY.
Yeah, totally. And it's like, whether you're really doing it or not, you know? And so I'm always looking for new ways to do that, you know, from, you know, buying the printing press, you know, and then to figuring out, you know, with the label too. It's like learning the business side has been really interesting for me because it's they're all just so different, and being on the other side of things, as far as that goes, you know, having the other conversation with the band, you know, where you are the A&R guy is such a weird, you know, it's totally screws with your mind, you know, but, I don't know. At the end of the day, I think it's a really great adventure story. And it's like, you look to, I mean, a guy like Jay-Z is cool, but really like Richard Branson or, you know, or Howard Hughes, these guys who are like, you know, untouchable as far as that goes, you know, like anyone who's like at, you know, like an airline and a movie, you know, I mean, it's bizarre to me, you know, and
it's on the verge of, you know, eccentricity or sort of,
it's
being so eccentric.
Yeah. And it's insane. And it's like, can people still do it anymore? And obviously Richard Branson proves that you can, but I don't even know that everybody, I mean, it's so gigantic that I don't even, because I was talking to, you know, people on a bus the other day about Richard Branson, and you know, I was like, you know, he started, you know, Virgin. I was like, everything Virgin is Richard Branson, or started by Richard Branson. You
know, it's like David Geffen.
Yeah, totally. And they were like, so like Virgin Airlines. I was like, yeah. And they were like, Virgin Records. I was like, yeah. I was like, there's also this Virgin train system in Europe that's gigantic. I mean, and it was like, he owns like whatever amount of islands, and now is trying to, you know, take private, you know, shuttles into space.
Well, in the theory, I guess what the stock markets were saying is the reason why he wants to create that alternative fuel is because he'll own it.
Yeah.
Everybody will have to buy the airline fuel from him.
Right, and it'll be his.
Very genius.
Yeah.
Very, very. I mean, of course, it wasn't in any of the press releases, but very genius. So, I mean, I guess that is something to be said about basically anybody at the age of 30 is that you can't sell to them like you could to people over 30. Mm-hmm. You can't sell them a widget or a shirt or something like that. Mm-hmm. And they're very distrustful of corporations. They're very distrustful of the sale. And I guess, you know, you got your own record company now. And there's a lot of talk from people that start record companies say, I'm going to do it differently.
Right.
You know, I'm not going to rip off my artists. And I'm not going to, you know, the old deal where it's like, you know, you want to get paid for your royalties, then try and audit me.
Right.
You know, and I guess, has there been things like with your own record company that you've set off right off the bat saying, I'm not going to do it this way and that way and this way?
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting because we're in a very, 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 very bizarre situation because... I don't even know how much of this I'm allowed to talk about, but I'm going to talk about it anyway. So
you can call me up later.
Our deal goes through Fuel by Ramen. So we're distributed by ADA, but we don't have a deal with, you know, a major label. We have a deal with Fuel by Ramen, who then has whatever deals they have. And essentially, when it began, we were a boutique label. Like I called up John from Fuel by Ramen every day for about 3 weeks and was like, you know, sign the academy. And it was kind of just because they're friends of mine and I really liked their music and I thought they could be really great, but there was no...
But isn't the whole idea not to hire your friends?
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's always...
It's going to be difficult.
Yeah, that's always...
Somebody's got to be the dick at some
point. Yeah. It's always a bad idea. And thankfully that usually for the most part... when you're a creative person and the other people are creative people, like, I think you give each other different room, kind of, versus when it's a very business-minded person and a creative person, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that being an artist, that I have that understanding a little bit as well, like, it's it's hard to navigate. But, I mean, one of the things that we decided was that... that we were going to essentially have somewhat of a democracy and that every band was going to be able to vote and have other bands on the label. And I mean, it's been existing and it's how the label's been running. But at some point, I mean, I foresee it'll be a problem. And at some point it's like, why would this, you know,
hopefully your cell phone will be shut off.
Yeah. Right. You know, and why did these guys get this amount of votes and these guys should get this, you know, or whatever. And I mean, essentially it all kind of, maybe, you know, went really wrong and really right with Panic, because it changed us from a boutique label to what kind of everybody was talking about. And it was just a freak of nature. I mean, like, a lot of it was, like, the right place at the right time. Like, you know, right when people were, like, you know, Fall Out Boy was kind of reaching its, you know, or heading towards its peak on our, on From Under the Cork Tree. I mean, a lot of people were like, you know, I mean, your fan base that jumps right in with you and at the get-go kind of is like, I don't want to, you know, like, my brother wears that shirt now. I don't want to be into that band. And all of a sudden, there's this new Fall Out Boy they can be into that's like version 2.0 because, like, it's got, like, you know, like, dancing monkeys on stage or whatever, you know.
Right, and then you're competing with yourself.
Yeah, essentially. And it's, I mean, and to be honest with you, that's one of our most recent issues is that our bands all compete in most of the categories that they're in, like the Woody Awards, they all compete with each other. For video space, they all compete with each other. It's like all our bands against each other, you know, and it's like you always are able to, like, you know, put in the extra phone call or put in the extra little bit, and it's like, how do you decide to do that and who
over another,
you know, and why do you pull the trigger on one thing versus the other? And
it's I don't know. Which girlfriend do you like the most?
Right, totally. You know, it's very, it can be... it's very strange headspace, you know. And then a lot more in the music industry is kind of glad-handing people. Then, you know, especially once you get, you know, to a major label level, like, it's like, you know, all of a sudden when our label wasn't boutique-y anymore, like, you know, certain people wanted me on the phone once a week, but not, like, really to talk about anything, just because they, like, had to get me on the phone once a week. And some of it I'm not very good at, and I don't really, you know, I'm not really interested in doing. And I mean, that's one of the good reasons that I do it with John from Fueled by Ramen, because he is able to do that, like, far more, you know, flawlessly. He'll be up at 9 a.m. and he will, you know.
He's a business guy.
Yeah, totally.
You're the idea guy.
Yeah, I'm the idea guy and he's the business guy. And it's interesting because it's like, I learn more about it, you know, like, I know about, like, different end caps and, like, whether it's worth this amount of money, you know, and co-ops and these different things. But at the same time, like I couldn't put together, like, you know, our annual reports or anything like that, you know. So it's kind of been an interesting thing, but it's been a, like, great learning process. Right. And it's just the learning curve got really, you know, went really fast when Panic showed up, kind of.
So I realized I haven't been putting in any breaks for songs. We've been talking and talking, which is fascinating. So why don't we try and do a quick break for, like, two songs? But why don't we play something that's on your iPod? That's like something that's. Why don't we play something that kind of has, like, probably like the two songs that probably help you chill out the most? Maybe kind of like a crazy day. And it's just hell, and maybe all those bands are pissed off at you because, you know, Fall Out Boy got an MTV and none of them did, and so you've been getting the phone calls and the text messages. Right. And what are those two songs that you would say, you know, these are my Zen songs?
I would definitely, randomly, I think I would probably say, Smith's Lullaby, or is it Morrissey Lullaby?
I think it is the Smith.
Smith Lullaby, yeah. And then I don't know the names of the songs, but it's this band Kent.
Kent, okay.
Yeah, and because a lot of, I think the songs are all in Swedish, or they're in a different language.
I'm gonna
have fun finding them. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But no. The interesting thing about Kent is they were, like, the band that I was sure was, like, the next, you know, band. Like, they were definitely in the Muse Radiohead, and I was like, yeah, this is, you know, and then it was just like, it went dark, you know, it was just like, no.
Well, that whole genre did.
Yeah, it was kind of like,
unfortunately.
Yeah, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, anything by Kent.
Sing me to sleep. Sing me to sleep. I'm tired and dying. I want to go to bed. Sing me to sleep. Sing me to sleep. And then leave me alone. Don't try to wake me in the morning, 'cause I will be gone. Don't feel bad for me, I want you to know. Deep in the cell of my heart, I will feel so glad to go. Sing me to sleep, sing me to sleep. I don't want to wake up on my own anymore. Sing to me, sing to me. I don't want to wake up on my own anymore. Don't feel bad for me, I want you to know. Deep in the cell of my heart, I really want to go. There is another world, there is a better world.
just to kind of bring a little levity back into it, you started off talking about one of the things I wanted to ask you about, which is, what are some of the fans always see what you've done. They see you on the VMAs, they see you on this or that, or at this red carpet thing or that thing. But what are some of the things you guys have turned down? I don't mean you to like burn bridges, but yeah. You know, but I'm just kind of, you never hear about that side of things.
No, totally.
Cause you actually build more credibility.
Yeah, definitely. Down. And it's like, nobody ever really broadcasts it. Well, there's been a couple, I mean, I guess a lot of people, I don't know if people know about the Kidz Bop thing, but, they listed Dance Dance on the Kidz Bop track listing last year. And I wrote them an email kind of saying, I don't really understand how kids are going to be singing, like, I only want sympathy in the form of you crawling into bed with me. You know, like, I was like, this doesn't really right. seem like it's a good idea for either of us, you know? And they were like, well, sometimes, you know, bands change their lyrics. And I was like, well, I don't know. We're just not going to do that. You know, it's just not really our thing.
The A&R person on that thing really didn't pay attention.
Yeah, you know, yeah. Right. And it's, and
they possibly, just were thinking brand names.
Yeah, and possibly has something to do with Patrick's enunciation or whatever. And probably, you know, or whatever. But, so.
Didn't know you had an Eliza Doolittle problem.
Right. Yeah. The interesting thing, I think, is like, I mean, if we ever wanted to do like a kids friendly record, like if I ever had kids, like I'm sure
your
we wouldn't
Elmo
want to.
Record?
I mean, we would just do it on our own and do it the way we wanted, I think, to do it. Early on in our career, we got approached by like numerous beer companies, kind of, and I think it was before they really realized the age of our crowd, you know, and yeah, so there was kind of like a, you know, where is your beer tonight? I hope it is a Heineken. Like that kind of interest in the band, and that was not really the right thing for the band.
You know, but you know, there is a ringtone in that.
Yeah, definitely. No. I mean, that,
you can make a fortune off
that. That is somebody's. That's the ultimate paycheck. That's when you know when the band's done. That's it. You know, if you ever hear that, that means you will not hear from us again.
I think right after that is doing the answering machine messages.
Yeah, the answering machine messages, and then the Vegas review, and then you're done.
Right.
Yeah, we had that, and then we had we were doing a deal with this is one that was just kind of a weird one. We were doing a deal with a toy company, and we were, you know, really into toys and really into, you know, and it was, you know, like kind of like Lego-y, and it was really cool, and they were like, it's like a, you know, a real like, you know, like little dudes demographic, and we were like, that's cool, because we don't, you know, it's not really one of the places, you know, where, I mean, it's one of the places where we definitely could like use help, and you know, it seemed interesting. And then yeah, after those pictures came out, we just didn't get a lot of phone calls returned from it, you know, so that was one of the cases where you know. And it's interesting, you know, the other thing that's interesting is I watch all these, you know, I'll read these things, and I'll watch on, you know, VH1 or whatever it is, like, you know, what if Kurt Russell was Han Solo, like, he was up for the role, you know, or whatever, and you're like, well, that movie would have fucking sucked, you know,
right,
or whatever.
Right, exactly, yeah.
You know, and, or like the thing where they filmed half of Back to the Future with, I can't remember his name, the guy with the red hair, whatever, but Eric, I can't remember, but I always like noticed, I mean, you definitely as a band see sometimes other bands take the thing, like, you know, like you passed on
they
that or whatever.
Shark.
Yeah. And you're kind of like, it's just interesting, you know, it's interesting. And it's interesting to like, you know,
you
like
who's leading.
Yeah, kind of. And it's like, you know, like you're like, well, Leonardo DiCaprio and Matt Damon are always up for parts, you know, and you're like, that kind of makes sense because they kind of like, you know, look the same a little bit or something. I don't really know, you know, or whatever.
Right.
It's like it's just interesting to see like the bands that you think that you're probably like lumped in with, you know, or whatever. And it's, I don't know, it's just a bizarre thing kind of. You're like, well, you didn't go for us. That was number two. And you're like, or were we number two? You know.
Right. It's like, right. The first date was couldn't make it, so on the follow up.
Yeah,
right,
definitely.
Yeah, thanks a lot. I really appreciate it. You know, I mean, I guess with your level where you guys are right now, and I don't want to say a bell curve, maybe more of a roller coaster. How does a band at this level that you're at right now stay in control of what you're doing? because so much between the blogosphere and the message boards and the MySpace, and then you've got the media behind it and the different levels of media between, right. you know, the totally cred media, then you got the celebrity magazines, that,
right.
which I'm really surprised you haven't gotten hit with the paparazzi, like the stalking right. paparazzi.
Yeah.
But I mean, how do you stay in control of all that? Is it all come down to you calling up the management at Crush and saying, this is your job, you need to keep all this off of me, or you need to tell me where I'm going to start making the wrong decision? Or is this something where you guys collectively sit down and go, we're feeling a little stressed out right now because we're playing defense a lot?
It's weird. I mean, in the credibility scale, we were talking about this last night on the bus. There's like, all of a sudden, when you're, I mean, there's certain bands and, you know, they're going to be this size forever. Like, you're always going to be selling out 1,000 theaters. You're going to sell 100,000 records of every single record you put out till the end of time, you know, and that's just going to be, and it's like a great career to kind of have, you know, and then there, you know, I mean, I think a band like us is like, you know, it's going to be like here or it's going to be like here, kind of, you know, and I did a very up signal and a very down signal just for,
right,
because the cameras weren't on, you know, whatever, but
dramatic effect.
Yeah. I think that, I mean, the credibility scale is so funny because it's like, you know, about 4 months ago or something, I was like, everybody knows I'm going to go out and I'm going to wear eyeliner and, you know, whatever, these clothes or whatever. And I was like, I'm going to just stop doing that because it's like, at some point you want to keep people guessing and you don't want to become a parody of yourself, which is kind of inescapable in the, you know, industry that I'm in. But like, and I did it, and all of a sudden, like, in our Q&A and in our MySpace, like, we started getting all these, like, you know, emails, like, Pete's changed so much, you know, and he's so different now, and I was like, I'm not wearing fucking eyeliner, you know, like, it's not, you know.
Yeah, but did Billy Joe go through all that when he, you know, lost all that weight, and then he put on the eyeliner, and,
yeah,
you know,
I mean, I don't know, it's like, yeah, it's a weird thing, but then here's the other side of it, is that.
Did Gerard Way go through all that?
Dyed his hair blonde? Yeah, you want to know what? I think he did, you know what I'm saying? And people freaked out, you know, and they were like, in a good way and a bad way, like, in one way where it was like, people freaked out because they were like, oh my God, this guy's so different. But in another way, like, he was able to be like, this is a brand new thing. And you're like, well, it's kind of a fucking haircut. But like, I mean, like, you know, but I mean, but people react right. in that way. And then, but the other thing that's so bizarre about it is that, you know, like a week ago or something, you know, we were in Albuquerque and we got in a fight with the security at the show. And,
right, the infamous.
Yeah, yeah. And it's like, I mean, at the time, what's going through my head is like, this kid who's out with me is a guy that I've grown up with since I was 16. You know, who got kicked out of his parents' house and lived with me since he was 16. And as soon as I could give him a job or, like, he could work, you know, I was really interested in that. And, like, somebody swung their fist at him. And it's like, well, he's probably going to beat the dude up on his own. But it's like, I'm never going to let my friends fight alone because it's just kind right. of how I grew up. And I never really...
I think it's a Chicago thing.
Yeah, definitely, probably. You know, and it's like... yeah. But I never really stopped and thought, you know, like, this is going to be, like, you know, another, you know, kind of, like, viral thing. But then all of a sudden it slides the other way on the credibility scale where people are like, ah, I have so much respect for Pete again. And, like, oh, my God. And it's
yeah,
like,
exactly.
You know, when you're like, well, I didn't, you know, like, that was like a lightning striking, you know what I'm saying? Like, that doesn't happen, you know, and that wasn't... I didn't change in either situation, you know what I'm saying? Like, I think there's obviously a gradual change of a person, and especially like in the situation, you know, or mm-hmm. that we've been in, you know, whatever. But I mean, like, in neither situation was it like evidence of a change or, you know, like me reverting back to who
well,
I was.
The media becomes the message.
Yeah, totally.
You know, like the week before that, it was Saddam getting hanged. That was the cell phone video.
Right.
You know, and then the second week it's you get in a fight with a security guard.
Right. And it's like the new media and it's like the cameras everywhere. You know what I'm saying? And it's
right.
like you, everybody has, I mean, the thing that I find the most interesting and I like talking to people about is that, there's this generational disconnect, I think, where, my parents, I think, and people like a little bit older than me and almost even me, I have this certain faith in the media where you have an understanding that, you know, things have been fact checked. These, you know, like this, you know, there's
trust.
Yeah, just trust. There's not this, right. you know, like yell journalism. Like it's this exists, you know what I'm saying? And that, and these are real. And obviously everybody knows the like couple magazines that aren't, you know, or whatever,
right, right.
Like where you
or,
see the alien
or
babies
cable channels.
Or whatever. Yeah,
right.
you know, or whatever. But then along comes the internet and along comes, you know, these blogs and everything, and, you know, Wikipedia, and all of a sudden it's
which
kind
reminds
of...
reminds me, have you seen your Wikipedia lately?
No, I mean, it's,
I pulled this up for Leslie Simon this
really?
Today, yeah. And I was like, did you see how the Wikipedia starts? She's like, what do you mean? And it starts off, I have it right here.
Right, right.
It says, Fall Out Boy are a homosexual American pop rock band from Wilmette, Illinois.
Yeah, it's the most insane thing in the planet, you know?
So, if you get a phone call from Out Magazine wanting to do a cover story, just so you know.
You know, and it's like, and you watch these people have battles where they're like, you know, this guy's changing it, and this guy changes it back, and he changes it.
Right,
and,
exactly, yeah.
And, but it's just, it's interesting because
citizen
there's...
citizen journalist.
Yeah, but there's this like kind of disconnect because I think some of this generation or the in-between generation kind of is hazy on it, and... you don't really understand that, you know, everybody, you know, who gets on the internet doesn't need to have, like, you know, a license or any kind of credibility
sure.
or fact-checked anything. But people believe anything anyone sees in print, they just believe a lot of times. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, you write this and it's like, you're not, nobody's picking up on the sarcasm. Nobody's picking up on the fact that this person probably wasn't even there, you know, and it's...
it's like those fights you get with your friends over instant messages.
Oh,
somebody
yeah.
didn't catch the sarcasm.
Oh, yeah, 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 totally. And it doesn't get picked up at
oh,
all.
Oh, you don't like me now? Well,
yeah.
fuck you.
Yeah, totally.
I'm not touring with you anymore.
Yeah, totally.
You know? But, I mean, I do want to talk about, we kind of bounced around a little bit, but I do want to talk about fashion, because we're kind of dealing with this at AP right now. And that is, like, the fashionistas versus the people that are more like the average Joes.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like, you know, there wouldn't be a punk rock or, you know, much less a hardcore. They could have born out of that whole thing in the metal. If it wouldn't have been for the London punks and stuff like that, that were the dress up, the
right.
ones that went to the stores and bought all this stuff and did all
right.
the hair color and all that stuff like that. And but there definitely seems to be this eternal fight that continually happens, and it's probably happened in scene after scene after scene. I mean, you go back and study the hippie scene, it's probably the same damn fight, you know, between the people that think that, you know, that they want to make a statement with their fashion versus the people that think it's all about the music.
Right.
And you should be able to wear flannel and jeans and a beat up pair of whatever. They don't have to be Converse. They don't
right.
have to be whatever. And I guess like being, you know, having your own film or your own clothing company and having accessories and I was looking through them and stuff like that. I mean, it's like, where are you kind of standing on all that? Is overall, like, is it? It's like that's what the Hot Topic
right.
fight is really about.
Right. I mean, I essentially
the kids wearing Hot Topic.
Right. I essentially disagree with the latter.
The one that it's all about the music.
Yeah, I disagree on two levels. I really feel like, like, the music is the most important thing. I mean, like, you know, I don't go out and listen to what someone's wearing, you know, and that's not what I fall asleep to or something like that. But at the same time, when I think about the great icons, and not just in music, but in anything, you know, from politics to movies to whatever it is, have all had, you know, kind of a uniform or something that set them apart or something that you remembered and kind of, you know, whether it was the facial hair or was, you know...
Well, look at the Ramones.
Yeah, I mean, and everyone
did. As simplistic
did.
As it
yeah,
was.
Yeah, no, everybody did. I mean, to the... Yeah, and a lot
the
of
Beatles.
And a lot of the Beatles, that's what I was going to say, and, like,
yeah.
refused, and it's like... I think that it goes... It's obvious that it goes in waves. It travels in waves, you know, where it goes to this, you know, height of androgynous, you know...
Ridiculous.
Yeah, which is like we're there. We're in the ballpark of it right now. I don't think that there's enough bands doing it, you know, right now. But I mean, I think we're getting there. Where it's like it's
maybe
big.
A peak with the Manson, Marilyn Manson.
Yeah,
stuff.
You know, it did. Yeah.
Yeah,
and I think, and then I just think a lot of bands are kind of theatrical again. I mean, it's awesome, but you know, the other one's gonna come. You know, the other side of the wave is gonna come out. And then the other thing I think is the other side of that is that. I remember, you know, going to shows and I'd see like the "This is not a Fugazi" shirt being sold, you know, and then I saw like a zillion people buying them and I was like, but that is a fucking Fugazi shirt.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
right.
I mean, like the dude is in fucking flannel, but like that, and that's the anti-uniform, but that's like his fucking uniform. You know what I'm saying? Like that is what, you know what I'm saying?
He's still making a statement regardless.
Yeah, people know, you know, because he's not doing it, he's doing it. You know what I'm saying? And it's like, it's like Eminem, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's like he talked all this shit on like every pop artist and everything, but it's like he was played on Top 40 and TRL more than any of them. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And I mean, I think that that's one of the interesting things. And then I think that the other interesting thing is where you can kind of go with your brand. You can be kind of a Walmart brand. You could be a Hot Topic brand, or you can kind of be one of these like boutique-y brands, you know. And it's what's interesting to you. And then I think that, I mean, it's where you want to appeal, because, you know, when I was, you know, when I used to go buy, you know, I would go buy Atticus and stuff like that, I was like, you know, make some, you know, this was 2 years ago or whatever, you know, whatever it was, I was like, make some girls jeans, like, we'll wear them, you know, or whatever, you know, I don't know, whatever, you know. And they were like, yeah, nobody in the middle of the country will buy those, you know what I'm saying, like, no, it's not there yet, you know, or whatever. And it's kind of,
people tell you not to do it.
Yeah, totally. But you know what I'm saying, though? It's kind of, like, interesting, like, how you have the coasts, kind of, and then, like, a couple of the major cities, but then, and, you know, obviously, like, hipsters and all the cities, you know, or whatever. But then you also have, like, the middle of the country that's kind of always at a different point, you know, or whatever, or the red states, or whatever you want to kind of call them, you know. I don't know, I mean, I, you know, whatever. Right, then right. It's always at kind of a different place. And then, like, there was things that I didn't even know about, you know, like, you know, there's branding guys. There are these guys whose job it is to brand you, which I didn't know. And, you know, 90% of these hip-hop moguls and icons have used one guy. I can't even remember his name. And then there's this street team, I think, of about 80,000 girls. And maybe they have it for other... This is one that I happen to know about, who are kind of known as... culture arbitrators or tastemakers. And they are actually, you know, allowed to have these clothes, you know, 6 months out or 8 months out, and they wear them to school, and then all of a sudden people are like, holy shit, I gotta be wearing like tight rolled jeans or whatever, you know. But I don't know if it existed when I was in school, but I had no idea. I just thought those were the cool people, kind of, you know. I had no idea that that was like actually a network, you know, or whatever. It's kind of interesting.
I went past. I was going into Banana Republic the other day to get a T-shirt, and there was a girl that was standing in front of it, and she was a teenage girl, and she looked like a Fall Out Boy fan actually. And she was sitting there saying, she came up to me and she's like, "Do you know where Trader Joe's is?" And it was like one of these more up and coming shopping centers. And I was like, "Well, it's right around the corner over there," and anybody would have known it. Right. And then I went in, and I came out 20 minutes later, and she's asking another guy the same thing, and that's why she was there. She was a plant.
Oh,
and
really?
It was just marketing. It was just there to say Trader Joe's and get the guy to think, get the person to think about it.
That's insane.
So
yeah, it's crazy.
You know, it's,
yeah,
it's really crazy. But why don't we do this? Why don't we do? Let's do another song break, and then I just got a couple of themes I want to talk about real fast, and then we'll wrap this up.
Cool.
Is that cool?
Yeah.
All right. So why don't we talk? Why don't you tell me two songs that are your like the songs you put on that you go clean around the house in? You know, the ones that get you all psyched up to kind of like, you know, clean up the tour bus or your cleanup or whatever.
I would have to say Gorilla Biscuits, Start Today.
Okay.
And what else would make me want to clean anything ever? I don't even really like cleaning it at all.
Okay, well, how about just light and airy songs then to kind of make you in a happy mood?
I actually, I like listening to Outkast, The Whole World. Or whatever it is, you know, The Whole World Loves It When You Don't Get Down.
Yeah.
I like that song.
Next time I-
Here we go. Yeah, I'm afraid, like I'm scared as a dog, but I've got a new song and I want y'all to sing along. Sing along. See, this is the way that we walk on the sun. It's a day when it's raining inside and you're not behind, then you see what you find. I called a sucker dying cause he thought it could rhyme. And if his mama is a call, the daughter must be a dime. I gotta meet her, don't take no shots, I don't use a reefer. Asian, I don't even play the radio neither. Only if I need to know the spokes or the weather. I'm a cool type of brother, but yep, your head I sever from the neck. See, ain't nothing changed, hit the stage. Set a date, sucker, in battle we can't engage. I'll slice you, wipe you, marry you, divorce you, throw the Porsche at you. It's what I'm forced to do, with my back against the wall. Click his back, y'all. No, it ain't went nowhere like heavy hair with style and gel in it. Throw a curl in it, dread that nappy up, throw a shell in it. Whatever floats your boat, I find your lost remote. And this is for them niggas working at the airport who got laid off. I take my shades off. If you look straight in my eyes, you still might see your disguise. Because the whole, world
loves it when you don't.
Mind. Spit them, polish, look how they shine. Glitter, glisten, gloss, floss. I catch a beat running like Randy Moss. Riding that bitch off like a brand new house. I'm rolling my stones, gather no moss. Mommy, I'm coming, I hope you get off. I rock you on boat like a Leah, then talk. Back, back, forth, forth. Get that sailor on course, course. Make that track a corpse, corpse. Rap, roll, utterly rock. With my mouth to the mic and my hand on my Cadillac Outcast, this won't stop.
The whole world loves it when you don't.
Dismal. Went in the bathroom, medicine cabinet, Pepto Bismol. Need it for my stomach, cause my tummy kinda aches like a junkie on the draw, fresh up off the plate. Wait, back to the enemy of the state, is the Republicans or Democratic candidate debate. Now even the black box sold the fake. Clueless like Shay and Scooby before commercial rate. Hey, extreme prejudice, dismiss this. If you want to, you can dub it till you hit list. I know you're going to. We in this replenish your musical wish list. When it comes to this music, we stay relentless, pursuing all that's pursuable. Doing God, winning all things that are doable. The only liable limitation is yourself, Dre. Set it on the right, and I'll set it on the left, cause.
The whole world loves it when you don't.
You definitely, I think as Leslie said, constantly connected.
Yeah, it's insane. It's the most annoying thing ever. Everyone always calls it, because it's not as bad right now, but people call it, what do they call it? Like my kind of like sidekick lapse where I'm going on it and people ask me a question. And I will, and it goes in and it like processes and it's like, and it comes out like about, you know, like 45 seconds later than it's supposed to come out. And it was like. Okay. But it's interesting because it kind of goes into this like zone somewhere, you know, like this nether region.
But you talk to everybody via a message or a text, but you don't hear them.
Yeah.
We're losing something.
I don't know.
It's going to be interesting to see what happens like in 5 years. I think it'll affect the whole culture, like everybody.
Yeah, it's
the way we won't be able to talk to each other so easy.
Yeah, it definitely affects social dynamics. And I noticed like a lot more people who text definitely need a lot more social lubricants when they're around real human beings.
Some more beers.
Yeah. I don't know. I think, you know, like we'll notice and we'll see whether people's thumbs become stronger. I mean, some girl was telling me, she's like, you're going to end up with arthritis. And I was like, no way. I'm evolving. You'll see these things. These things are going to get huge. Yeah, these things are going to get huge.
I'll lift your mini.
Yeah.
Exactly. Definitely. You know, well, that was one of the themes I did want to talk about, which is being a record company and also a band and what you guys are kind of going through with everything. With the emerging technology and the way that everything, I mean, the iPhone. It's going to change.
Oh, insane.
Change everything. Yeah. You got the music industry basically giving up on digital rights management. Mm-hmm. You know, like Bill Gates and those guys are figuring about a year and it's going to be finished.
Yeah.
So, like, what's it doing for? Where are you guys thinking? How are you feeling? As much as like the retail environment, the stores are closing, towers bankrupt and gone. Some of that. I mean, you know, if you're looking in the future, how do you think a Fall Out Boy record is going to be? I guess developed and then given to its fans.
This is the most interesting probably topic that I could talk about because I feel like I could talk about it for 24 hours and it would still be all hypothetical questions and it's so interesting to talk about and I think so many things. I mean, I've Mike Carden from the Academy is like said to me, he's like, Fall Out Boy is going to be the last band that's going to sell records, you know, or whatever. And
that's interesting.
You know, and I was like,
good point.
Yeah.
Right?
And I was like, that's bizarre kind of, I mean, I was like, it was a weird tag because I was kind of like, you know, like, oh, that's just meant to fluff you up, you know, but then I was like, this kind of is a bizarre tag. And we went down to Brazil, about 6 weeks ago and,
life's rough.
Yeah.
Life's real rough. I hope you know that.
So we went down there and we played a show for about, like 42,000 people, and we're playing, and they're singing every word, and not to the singles, they're singing every word to every single song, and I get off stage, and like you're like, when you get off a stage like that, like I don't really care who you are, like you get off stage, and you're like, we're the biggest fucking band in Brazil, you know, like this is insane, I gotta go talk to somebody right now about this, you know, so we get off, we go to talk to our people at our label, and we're like, you know, we're like, how many records have we sold? And they're like 7,000, and I'm like. I mean, like, that's just it. Like, that was just, like, one, like, look into it, you know? And it's like, that's going to be everywhere, you know? Like, that was just Brazil. And I feel like, I mean, one of the reasons I think that, for two reasons I think that we've been kind of doing okay with records so far is because, one, I feel like we've kind of gone out of our way to demonstrate that we care about the entire package, like, everything from the art to the song titles to the lyrics to every single song on the record, you know, and want to have innovative ways to kind of have people involved. And then two, I think that, you know, I mean, at least on our last record, how I felt about like the consumer was they were still slightly nervous about buying something that was intangible. Like a lot of consumers still really at that time.
Right.
And I think it's changed a little bit, but I don't really know, like needed something hard that they had bought because that's just kind of like the, you know, human dynamic. And then cared about the band or had some kind of attachment or empathy with the band. And that's why you would buy this record, whereas you wouldn't maybe buy this record because you didn't care about that, you know? And so, I don't know. It's like, I mean, I guess I'll probably be a bit of a shit talker on this, but I think that, you know, the major label industry has handled this about as poorly as you could handle.
I don't think there'd be anybody who would disagree with you.
Yeah, though. You know, I mean, it's
certain labels have got a little bit more than others. But
yeah, it's just interesting, you know, and it's. Labels run by the old guard, but trying to keep up with this technology that moves way faster than either the law or your marketing could ever keep up with. I mean, by the time you catch up with it, it's like they're already on to the next thing. Like,
exactly.
You know, and there's so many things about it. Like,
so do you think that the future of Fall Out Boy is going to be releasing digital records?
I think the future of Fall Out Boy will be releasing digital records and really live shows is where it's going to be at. Like
some more of a performance.
Yeah, we're a band that...
Not saying that you're not performing now, but yeah, you know what I mean.
No, totally. And we're a band that's definitely... you know, we're okay that radio is kind of going away. Like, we're a band that's done fine with radio and done fine without radio, and we'll be all right. And but it's kind of interesting because... you see, on one hand, you kind of see the a lot of labels getting real desperate, kind of, and all of a sudden, you know, you have these deals where it's, you know,
sign
like
your merch away,
merch,
sign
yeah,
away, yeah,
you know, and it's like, wait, why the fuck am I gonna do that? That's the only place that
right.
I do all right, you know, like that's
80-20 deal, right.
Yeah, you know, why would I ever do that, you know, and it becomes weird in a very compromising and bizarre position to be in when you're at a record label, because all of a sudden it's like you're hearing these murmurings and you're like, you know, I mean, we are still selling records, but it's like at the same time it's like you hear people being like, well, maybe we should get these like merch deals going, like this is what, you know, and record labels are essentially becoming ad like giant ad agencies, you know, and that's like all they're really needed for, you know. And and then on the other hand, the thing that I started thinking about 2 weeks ago or so, Christmas dinner, because I was talking to my my aunt and uncle, and they're really into like, you know, like U2 and bands like that, and they were like, you know, like, why don't you, you know, tour with U2? And I was like, that's a fucking insane thing.
Do the mega tour.
Yeah, yeah, and I was like, that's kind of an insane thing, because I don't think U2,
Gwen
like,
Stefani,
no, yeah,
and
yeah,
Fall Out,
yeah, right, you know, and then they were kind of,
and the Pussycat Dolls.
Right, yeah, yeah, and then they were kind of like, also, they were like, well, why don't you charge, you know, like $80 a ticket? And I kind of thought about this, and I was like, there's this group of gilded bands, you know what I'm saying, that exist, like it's, you know, like, you know, U2, the Rolling Stones, like bands like that, that, you know, they'll put out a record every couple of years, they'll win Grammys, they'll go out on a tour.
Dylan.
Yeah, yeah, and they'll go out on a tour and it grosses like something like retarded, you know what I'm saying? Like that Rolling Stone list that where
right.
it's like, where you're like, I think we might be on it. Oh, no. This, like, right. And then you see the numbers and you're
you
like, oh, no.
Wayne
yeah.
Newton's Sunday
yeah,
act
right, totally.
In November.
Yeah,
right.
And the interesting thing, that the thing that I find the most interesting about it is that we haven't seen any bands move into that gilded kind of group in a really long time, I don't feel like. And it's like maybe Coldplay is kind of almost in the ballpark of it, you know, or whatever. But it's weird. And it's like, is it because those bands kind of have made it a good old boys club? Or is it like music was so different then? Or like, I don't, you know, like, or is it just because it appeals to everyone? Whereas the music that's out there right now, it just appeals to such, it's like so into, you know, some compartmentalized. I mean, like, I don't even
sure.
really know. But it's like, it's a very weird thing to think about. Because you're like, I don't know if I will ever be there, you know, like my band could be around for 20 years and it's like we might probably just not, you know, it's like shouldn't Green Day be there? And it's like, I mean, maybe they like kind of are on the way to doing that, you know, by doing some of the things that they've been doing, you know, lately. But it's like, I mean, they've been doing it for like what, 15 or 20 years now, you know, and it seems like they should be, you know.
Right. I guess, well, what do they say? It's like somebody just wrote in Time magazine recently, they say, you no longer have your 15 minutes of fame, you now have your 15, you're not famous for 15 minutes, you're famous to 15 people
15
on MySpace.
Yeah, which is one of the, it was one of the greatest quotes, and they actually said in it, I remember they said that they can't attribute it to anybody because so many people take credit for it, which is interesting because it's like so like ironic, you know, it's like, yeah, I don't know.
So just because you get probably 30 million demos a year, and we get them sent to us too. The ultimate question right now for any band or musician out there that's starting up, high school, has your picture up on their wall,
right.
your guy's picture, and wants to be the next Fall Out Boy, do you have to sign to a major label? Because you know that's what that I guess the formality is still embedded in people's minds. It's just like commercial radio. You need to have commercial radio to get
right.
it. But I don't know a manager that agrees with that anymore.
Right. It's interesting because like a lot of the, you know, quote unquote, you know, I'll quote Dillinger, Pat from Dillinger 4, a lot of the independent rock out there is neither independent nor does it rock. I think that
right, yeah, yeah.
I think that,
yeah.
you know, people have,
there's a t-shirt there.
Yeah, I mean, people have a strange view of indie labels that aren't really, you know, I mean, since, and because I'm on the other side of things, I know that you're not really indie, you know, and you could say whatever you want, but you're not, you're essentially a major label or you're an imprint, you know, and then, and now these indie labels, you know, and it's an interesting thing because after you've had some success, it's like, how do you not fall into that thing? You fall into the major label thing where it's like, after you've had some success, you start getting desperate for the next success.
Right.
So you have signed up a bunch of things, throw it against the wall, and whatever sticks you get behind and whatever doesn't just kind of like falls into like, you know, like wherever, this cavern that never gets talked about again.
Right,
you know?
Right.
And then you have these major labels, on the other hand, that want to be like indie labels. And want to be able to get bands from 0 to 80,000 or 0 to 50,000.
It's like
records.
The fat guy trying to fit into a 32.
Yeah, right. You know, and it's like,
yeah.
Everybody's got their own new system for doing it. Everyone, you know, whether it's like, you know, now managers are going to be labels or like, you know, whatever. I mean, like everyone has a new theory on where it's going to go and how it's going to be, you know, or whatever. But I mean, definitely when we signed. Our label was not able to take us to commercial radio at the time. And at that point, like, everyone still considered that really, you know, a necessity. And I think that we were one of the first bands that kind of did it in this way that, you know, I think that now at this point where it's at, you know, everybody, it's really easy to be like, you know, I saw that thing coming, like, this thing was, you know, like, but it's like, like, when you guys put us on the cover of AP Magazine, we were like, holy shit, like, who the fuck did we trick, you know, or whatever. Like, you know what I'm saying? We were like, there's no, you know what I'm saying? Like, we had,
right.
You know, like, and I think it was really, like, really forward thinking because it was early, you know what
yeah,
I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I feel like we were one of the bands that just really had not sold enough records or had...
But it was the fan base. I mean, ultimately...
Yeah, no, it was,
you don't
yeah.
need to sell a million records.
Right, totally.
If you
but
got
I think
70,000 fans that will buy everything.
It was, yeah, totally. Which, but I think it was one of the... There were some people that were on board with that and understood that idea, you know, that like, that our fan base is so motivated that they're going to get out there and show you
right.
that they exist. And there's some people that didn't understand it. And I think that the interesting thing since then is that... There's been a couple of attempts to kind of follow this, you know, kind of.
So you said a
creation.
Model,
yeah.
Unintentionally.
Yeah, and I think it's hard to do. It's hard to create like an organic viral buzz that's not organic. You know what I'm saying? It's hard. It's like if Fall Out Boy had all been a plan, like if we had gotten all the things that we'd wanted to get, I think we would have had a very different history too.
You
know.
Fight for it.
Yeah, you know, and it's like when we went to get added to Modern Rock. The week we went to get added, K-Rock shut down, you know, and I think a lot of these things were kind of blessings in disguise, you know,
everything's meant to happen
yeah,
for a reason.
No, totally. And,
you know?
And, but it's, I mean, I think that this is the biggest thing ever is that to me is that bands shouldn't feel so desperate to sign anywhere that they'll sign anything because there's a lot of bands out there that are signed that probably shouldn't be signed. And then there's a lot of band, like, I mean, a band like The Format, who's kind of like, you know, gone through the ringer, you know, or whatever. And I think now has an interesting new way they're kind of going about things. But it's like, in my head, I don't see why that band shouldn't be, you know, colossal, you know, or whatever.
Right,
and you can figure all the things out, you know, eventually, but it's I don't know. I mean, there's been a lot of bands on major labels that should have been huge, you know, like Quicksand or something like that, that just weren't. And then there's been bands where you're like, I never saw that thing coming. You know, like, how many people saw Kid Rock coming and selling Diamond in his record cycle? You know what I'm saying? Like, how many people were really like, yeah, like, because I remember seeing it on TV the first time and being like, wait, isn't this like this some 80 dude from the 80s? You know,
right, right.
Some like at the one of the MTV like Spring Break things. Like, I didn't get it at all, you know. And then like, next thing I knew, it was like I went platinum, you know, 11 times or whatever, you know, and it's like
and
11 times? Yeah.
Right. Now where is it?
Yeah.
Well, we do have to wrap it up, but I just want to ask one brief question, and then this will be the last one. But this one I've always kind of wondered about, especially with the Arms Race video and the way that you guys take it back, which was about 3 or 4 years ago, and where you're back at. Now, is that supposed to, we were talking about this today in the office, is that supposed to be the VFW? Is that a VFW hall, or is that the Knights of Columbus thing? What show is that supposed to be representing?
We weren't, see, because we felt like we wanted to shoot it in the Knights of Columbus that we you know,
right,
we're in or whatever.
They're in Chicago.
Yeah,
right?
And we weren't able to. And, you know, our director was like, he was like, well, we can recreate it. And we didn't feel comfortable, like, that one felt a little bit weird, kind of recreating, you know, and not having the right people there or whatever. So it's kind of like a...
It represents this thing.
Yeah.
So let's go back to that period. And I'm just kind of wondering between then and now, and you're stuck in these vans, and you're driving, you're crisscrossing the country, and... the sights that you see from inside the van as you're watching, you know, the country go past you. And was there ever one image that you saw sitting in that van? You know, it could have been 3 o'clock in the afternoon and everybody's, half of you guys are sleeping or something like that, and the music's playing and stuff and whatever. And you just saw it and it just moved you so much that today when you guys, you just feel so fortunate. You kind of sit there and go back and you say, you know what?
There's
always that one that sticks in your head, you know?
You
kind of wonder, like, where is that person now?
There's, I have so many interesting ones and so many firsts and crazy ones. I guess one that kind of sticks in my head is we went on this 2-week tour with Spitalfield, and we played maybe 2 shows on the entire tour because every single show fell through and we just mostly snuck into hotels.
Yeah.
And, we drove back from Los Angeles to Chicago straight.
Fun drive.
Yeah, and I drove from about L.A. to Montana myself. And I remember...
At least the scenic route.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You're smart.
Yeah.
You didn't do the Kansas route.
No, I remember driving through Arizona, and I remember pulling over at this weird dinosaur, like... fossils, bones thing, and going in by myself, and everyone else was asleep, and I remember looking at the like T-Rex out there and being like, feeling like it was Pee-wee's Big Adventure kind of. And that's definitely one that sticks out in my head. I mean, the other one probably
very Tim Burton-ish.
Yeah
I will admit
the other I got one other one, and that would probably be there's this giant Amoco sign in St. Louis, which is the world's, I think, biggest Amoco sign, and it's really huge. And we were in the parking lot of this, and it's it was the first time Joe, our guitarist, drank, and he got wasted. Like, he did the thing where he like drank like half a bottle of whiskey and half a bottle of vodka, because he didn't really, you know, he was
2 steps away from alcohol
poisoning. Yeah, yeah.
Got it.
And
yeah.
he was sitting in between the trailer and the van on the hitch, and my friend had emailed me, I was like, "What is this thing?" He emailed me Postal Service, and I didn't know what. I had no idea what it was. And I remember listening to Postal Service for the first time, and it was like before it was like the Postal Service. It was like this thing that like nobody knew about, and it was like the most moving thing. And then I saw him just fall backwards between the hitch on his back, and I to this day I like remember that. That moment, like, perfectly. Like, I can smell it and taste it and everything.
It's so weird. Postal Service reminds you of Joe falling, being tanked out of it. Well, you know, best of luck with everything with this tour.
Thank you.
Best of luck with everything with the multitude of companies and the books and stuff like that. Oh, and probably one thing, the Rainy Day Kids book. It was supposed to come out mid-February, I heard, but now it's postponed?
Yeah, mostly due to me and the editing process.
The great editor.
Yeah.
And Hemingway needed an editor.
Yeah, and if you're a writer or you're interested in writing, everyone knows what it's like. It's like having kids and then inviting someone over to molest them in front of you.
There's another t-shirt. You can make a couple million bucks on that. Thanks, Pete, for coming on. Best of luck with everything.
Cool, thank you.
All right, guys, later.
AP Podcasts are recorded at Lava Room Recording Studio in Cleveland, Ohio, a New York City quality studio at Cleveland prices. Check out www.lavaroomrecording.com. For more information on Alternative Press Magazine, go to www.altpress.com. The podcast engineer is John Walsh. Post-production assistance from Rob Bertenzi. I'm Mike Shea, and this is All My Fault. You can reach me directly at www.myspace.com/MikeSheaAP. That's SHEA, like the stadium, AP.